Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
And so we missed an episode.
Sorry.
It was a combination of ill-timed illnesses, busy schedules. We ultimately just decided, let's just skip one. Because when we did have a chance to record, it was literally right before Emerald City Comic Con, and that just seemed a poor use of effort.
Exactly. Because now we can talk about two conventions.
Yes, we can. So, really to start out this episode, we had two conventions in rather rapid succession this year. So, first off, I want to start with NorwestCon.
Yay.
So, I attended NorwestCon this year. Now, we've talked a little bit about this convention in the past, but basically NorwestCon is one of the oldest conventions in the Pacific Northwest. This was NorwestCon 39.
Good heavens.
And there was a time when it was the biggest convention in the area. It's an old school literary convention, which really just means it's a convention that, while primarily literary focused, encapsulates a lot of fandom.
Yep.
So you do get comics, you do get gaming. I was actually brought on as a member of the gaming panel or the gaming track due to my history at Wizards of the Coast, although I did speak on one comics panel and one geek culture panel.
Yes. NorwestCon stays true to its roots. I mean, it's a hotel con near the airport.
Yeah.
And over Easter weekend, which I think we talked about last time, whole idea of it. Once upon a time, Easter weekend was the slow weekend, and now it's con weekend.
Yeah. So, as a convention, I mean, from my perspective, it ran really well. I experienced no drama of any kind personally, and what little I heard from around the convention was a fairly drama-free con.
They've been at it for 40 years. I would hope they have their poop in a group by now.
As a committee, the people who run the convention, they've got it down.
Yeah.
They've practiced over years. They know what they're doing. And, you know, the hotel hosts a lot of conventions. This is the DoubleTree at SeaTac.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the DoubleTree just has made the decision, you know what, we're going to be a convention-friendly hotel because it brings in good business.
Hell yeah.
So they host quite a number of various conventions. But NorwestCon is certainly one of the biggest because it takes up the entire hotel.
Yeah.
And so for my perspective of doing panels, I did a panel. And there is a sad note. And I want to touch my first panel on Thursday of the convention was about iconic comic book characters. And I had two of the other panelists I knew. They were Matt Youngmark and Minimum Caliber, who, you know, I've known Matt off and on for years. And Minimum is a friend of mine.
Yeah,
her daughter tried to climb me during the convention. So, but the other person on the panel that I didn't really know was a guy named Logan Masterson.
Yes,
and it's a sad note because a few days after the convention, Logan took his own life.
Yeah,
and it's one of those things. I mean, he and I had only just met, but we had mutual friends, and it was just one of those. It was a took everyone by surprise. Obviously, things had been going on that he wasn't talking about. So, you know, obviously, my heart goes out to his family and loved ones.
Indeed.
The panel itself went great. It was discussing what makes characters iconic.
Yeah.
And what can take a character who is iconic and have them fade.
Interesting.
Was an aspect we talked about. Because we were discussing, like, the Shadow and the Phantom and Dick Tracy, and how did these characters who were definitely icons at one time become obscure characters now?
Oh, yeah.
And part of it, we pointed out with characters like the Phantom and to a certain degree Dick Tracy, as society evolves, the problematic aspects of certain characters come to light and can affect their acceptability. And, you know, the Phantom, white savior of the jungle.
Yeah.
And Dick Tracy and the deformed villains. It's
Dick Tracy, I mean, well, actually, in both cases, both of them recently had attempts at reboots.
Yeah.
Through movies, well, recently, as in, you know, since I've been alive. And both of those did not exactly do well in the box office.
Yeah, they're characters who, well, all three of them, the Shadow as well. Although the Shadow did okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are trickier characters because of the era they come out of. Mm-hmm. Although I think in the Shadow's case, the Shadow could have worked. I think it was just a bad script. But we also were discussing what characters, you know, like Captain America was a character created to be an icon.
Oh yeah.
And worked in that realm very well. You know, what made Superman and Batman and Spider-Man become iconic, and what characters maybe becoming iconic. Actually, we started with a central question I asked the panel, because I was the moderator, and I asked, is Deadpool iconic?
He's an iconic smartass.
Well, and the determination was no, he's not iconic.
Yeah.
He is popular,
but
he's not an icon. And the difference, and this was Logan, you know, you could go down to the mall and ask random sampling of people about characters. The icons are the ones that random people at the mall are going to know about.
Yeah.
Versus just the comic book fans. So you can go to the mall and ask random people about Deadpool, and half of them are going to go, oh, isn't that a movie with Ryan Reynolds? Versus you could ask about Lois Lane, and everyone's going to know about her and have an opinion about her. So she's iconic.
True. No.
And that's... So there was that aspect. So anyway, the next panels I did... So I had a great panel which had a funny story attached to it.
Uh-oh.
And this was called Reality Versus Fun. And this was a panel about about running role-playing games.
Yeah.
And how do you do the balance between trying to make your setting realistic and make it fun? The humor comes in that I'm not going to say which of my fellow panelists said this.
Names have been changed to protect the innocent.
But...
Or guilty.
There was a lifestyle track as well that included discussions of BDSM and things like that. And one of the panelists was on both tracks. And he hadn't looked at the description. And he came into the green room area and asked us, which track is that? Because it changes what we're talking about. And I told him, it's gaming, but as moderator, thank you for giving me my opening. So that was fun. Then my other gaming panel I had was about using improv skills in gaming, which was a lot of fun. We had I was not the moderator on that one. It was Ogre Whiteside, who's the head of the gaming track and an old friend of mine. But yeah, we were discussing how you specifically use, especially the yes and skills, but also some of the, I discussed aspects of long form improv, which I've studied. And yeah, it was a great discussion. We had a lot of stuff going on, a lot of audience interaction on that one. And yeah, it was great. A lot of funny stories came out of it.
Good.
So, including my story of how, in my current role-playing game, the restaurant the heroes hang out at is a Mexican-Irish fusion place now. Oh. Senior Finnegan's. Which came from improving.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into this story, although we've made the joke that the Shepherd's Taco is wonderful.
Of course it is.
But the other big panel I had was the Geek Policing, the gatekeeping panel.
Yes.
And that was really interesting. That's one I want to focus on because of the great discussion we had.
Yeah.
So Donna Pryor was the moderator, and she's involved in a lot of different groups, and she's perfect moderator for this panel. Jay Edditon from Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men.
Right.
Jay's written for a lot of different publications on geek culture. And so this was a subject they had talked about a lot. And then, so Johnny Nero Action Hero, which is he's an artist. He obviously is in geek culture. He's a musician. He was on the panel. And then the last person, and probably the most interesting person, was a woman who goes by Shubzilla. And we talked about her previously. She's part of, there's a form of rap called Nerdcore.
Yes.
And she is part of that. And she pointed out that in Nerdcore, there are a total of three women, of which she is one. And she is the only person of color that is female in the group. And she's also a board member for Geek Girl Con.
Good.
So she's involved in a lot of stuff. And she had some of the most pointed things to say that I thought were great, including, I think, if nothing stood out from me when she said, I am not your teachable moment.
Yes.
And that was very powerful because she's of Filipino descent. And she pointed out, it is not my job to be your teacher into what it's like to be a woman, what it's like to be a Pacific Asian, anything. If you expect me to teach you, I expect you to pay me.
Yes.
And that was just, I felt really powerful because a lot of people will explain it to me. That's how some abuse is done. Explain it to me. The flip side, and this was turned to me then, because when I'd done my introduction and talked about what we do here at Fanboy News Network and our efforts about inclusiveness, it was like, oh, the Donna then said, so Jeff, you're almost the opposite. You know, you're, you know, very much the white cis male guy, yet you've chosen to be an educator. Yeah. And I said, yeah, but the difference is, you know, Shabzilla's right. She doesn't have to teach anyone. It's not her job.
No.
I have chosen
to
do that. But I even pointed out that I had specifically made the choice to take advantage of my privilege.
Yes.
That, sad as it is, white privileged males are going to listen to other white privileged males.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, the why I chose to do it, and the fact that one of the challenges I have is that I have to have my privilege checked on a regular basis, mm-hmm. because I'm going to make mistakes, because that's the nature of privilege culture.
Yeah. You don't realize what it is, how much of what it is that we do is hurtful and problematic.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have to have to take steps, and it takes the thick skin and the ability to say, you're right, I was wrong.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that was, and again, that kind of came down to the, I chose to exist in this space this way to try and help. But I think some of the most poignant stuff came from Jay,
mm-hmm.
because Jay has put in the legwork to do a lot of the research.
Yes.
As well as Jay has the challenges of being trans, and, you know, trying to
hopefully everyone knew that before this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, Jay's been very open about that's why I use the neutral pronouns, because that has been Jay's preference.
Just checking.
And, you know, it's been challenges because Jay, you know, originally the podcast was Rachel and Miles Explain the X-Men.
Ah.
And so Jay's coming out process, by the nature of being a public feature in geek culture, had to, by its nature, be very public.
Yeah.
And one thing Jay said is that their audience, they consider magical, because the level of acceptance that came to them from the audience of that transition. Well, so, you know, that we definitely had a full room.
Yes. Well, and just to touch on that lightly before we move on, mm-hmm. the whole idea of everybody, well, no, not everybody, knowing someone and interacting with someone and having a personal face that you can put onto, this is the experience. This mm-hmm. is, and it's difficult because you're right. They are not your teachable moment,
mm-hmm.
as in they won't sit down and talk to you about it. But simply by seeing the life that they're living and the challenges that they face
mm-hmm.
can be a teachable moment if you pay attention.
Sure.
You know, the good old faithful of, why am I in favor of marriage equality? Because I want my friends to be able to get married.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and although the last thing I want to touch on, that, and again, this comes from Jay, is Jay pointed out on a recent episode of the podcast, Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men, that there is no, everyone wants to have that story. This is the coming out story. And it's, the challenge is, no one's coming out is exactly the same.
Yes.
It's a uniquely personal experience.
Indeed.
So, moving on from the panels.
Yes.
Just to touch on some other aspects. Again, NorwestCon's a really well-run convention, but there are going to be some changes that are being caused by rules the hotel cannot avoid because the chain had to make changes based on state law.
Okay.
So, one of the places I spent a lot of time was the green room. And this is where panelists and pros could come to, you know, plan out what we're going to do at the panels, or just to chill out for a minute without having to be in one of the public areas. I ended up doing a lot of conversations with people in there, and they had food available. They can't do that anymore.
Really?
Changes in the laws and changes in the policies of the Hilton chain. Yeah, without a banquet license, it's got to come through the hotel, and it's health.
Sure.
It's health law. We agreed we still need a green room.
Mm-hmm.
Just for a place, but the food would have to be different. But there's also an area called the hospitality suite.
Oh, sure.
Where people could come and get food. Just as a effort to make sure that 521 is observed. But that's probably going to go away as well.
That's sad to hear. As a sideline, just to make sure that for those of you who haven't been listening in on every single one of our conversations, the general rule of survival for all conventions is the 5-2-1 rule, which states that for every day you are at the convention, you need 5 hours of preferably uninterrupted sleep, 2 full meals, that's like food and a drink, and 1 shower. This is the most, well, I won't say all three of them. They're
really important.
They're a tripod.
There's a t-shirt seller who is at both NorwestCon and Emerald City.
Mm-hmm.
Has a t-shirt that just has safety placards that are those rules. No explanation. It just shows a 5 and a person in a bed, a 2 and a person at a table, and a 1 and a person in a shower.
I love it. I want one.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So this is a thing that exists. And the beauty is, since there's no words, if somebody sees your t-shirt and doesn't understand that they're going to ask you, you have a perfect opening to explain the rules to them.
I need to find that shirt. That is wonderful.
So yeah. The only other thing I want to say before we move on from NorwestCon is I had a really fun moment in one of the areas where people can sit down. Outside of the panel rooms, there's a new tradition of having a little ball pit.
From DashCon,
which is just an inflatable pool with balls in it. And it is designed for the kids.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a little girl, I'd say about 3, just the right size that she could stretch out in it. And she was just blissing out going, I have all the balls. And I thought it was adorable, but I mentioned DashCon and people had not heard of DashCon.
They know the ball pit, but they don't know DashCon.
Well, they don't. Yeah, I had to explain what 1 hour in the ball pit meant. So I had to explain DashCon and then Galacticon because of Colonel Ty in the ball pit. And they were like, really, this happened? And somebody went online and said, you did not tell me that the ball pit existed in an abyss because it's that wide area. One last thing. So every year at NorwestCon, some friends of mine, Ryan K. Johnson and Edward Martin III.
The third?
Yeah. They run a panel series called Let's Make a Movie, where they go through the entire process of making a movie during the convention, from concept to pitch to script to casting to filming to editing and then finally presentation. So they make a short film in 4 days.
Nice.
From scratch.
Excellent.
And it's usually something that if you're going to participate, that becomes sort of your focus for the weekend because it's a series of panels, but it's just going over filmmaking. And Ryan and I have history because Ryan is the guy who made a bunch of fan films in the 80s that I was involved with. If there's a movie out there you can find on YouTube called Star Trek The Pepsi Generation.
Yep.
That I'm in and Ryan directed. He also did a bunch of Doctor Who fan films with a female doctor. And we may have made some parodies of Mystery Science Theater 3000. Anyway, so we'd worked a lot together and maintained a friendship over the years. And I was walking out of a panel and just walking down the hall to go somewhere. And Ryan went, Jeff, wait. Okay, we need somebody for this scene. Are you game? Sure. So I'm in this year's film briefly.
Awesome.
So, and apparently I got a big laugh, so that's good.
Good. Congratulations.
Now, moving on to Emerald City.
Yay.
Because we both went to that convention.
Yes, we did.
So I'll let you start with Emerald City.
Well, I was lucky to get a 3-day pass. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I only ended up going a little bit on Friday after work and Saturday. Friday... My goal was Nathan Fillion had an autograph session at 4:30. I get off work at 3:30. So I go over there, stand in line. I stood in line until about 5:15. So the that I understand that they were having some problems with photo ops again. But I got my autograph. It was the day I was doing work, like physical labor at my office, and I was wearing my handyman clothes, which is a pair of green fatigues and combat boots and a shirt with a hammer on it. They're like, "Oh, you're wearing your handyman clothes." I'm like, "Yes, yes, I am." Get to meet Nathan Fillion, shook his hand, signed off on my thing, you know, got my 30-second interaction for $80. But that was, it was a good thing. And then Saturday, oh, and got to see some lovely and wonderful friends that had come down from Vancouver. And then Saturday was just spent wandering the show floor and attended one really awesome panel on problematic media, which was cool, talking about how it is possible to love something and critique something.
Yeah.
The examples that most of them were giving were games. I don't remember them off the top of my head. Persona, I think, was one of them. Dragon Age Inquisition was one of them. Games I'm not really familiar with. But someone else brought up H.P. Lovecraft.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember the word that she used, but basically part of her critique of it is working within the mythos, but creating new stories within that mythos that are more inclusive.
Yeah.
Because all those, you know, staid, uptight, closed, reserved librarians might let their hair down in other situations.
Right. So, sure.
But yeah, that was fun. I had a grand old time. There are definitely some differences now that Reed Pop is in charge.
Yeah.
Differences in costume policy. I mean, there was a lot more butts hanging out all over the place, and that wouldn't have flown last year. There was a new weapons and props policy, which frustrated a lot of people because they basically instituted it at the last minute. I'm not a cosplayer. I don't get it, why you would want to schlep around some huge prop all damn day, but some people want to do that, and it's not always made out of balsa wood and foam.
No.
So that was a bit problematic, but at the same time, the con still remains a bastion of, there are nice, very large, cosplay is not consent, these are your standard of behavior that we expect you to follow sort of place, and that is wonderful.
There was one problem I heard on that front.
The bathrooms.
But from what I hear, what I've been gathering, I don't think it was the convention. I think it was the convention center.
Yeah, the convention center staff, not the convention itself.
And that was that they had designated gender-neutral bathrooms, but convention center staff apparently didn't know that designation or didn't care.
Didn't get the memo.
And were kicking people out of bathrooms.
Yeah.
Saying, you don't belong here, you're the wrong gender. And it's like, but... Yeah, so that's that. But I think that is going to be addressed, since that was the biggest complaint I heard out of the convention.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll wait and see. But like I said, people are sending messages to Emerald City, which I think is fine. Let the convention deal with the convention center.
Yeah, that's their job.
So send the complaints to the convention, absolutely. But keep in mind, it was probably the convention center that were the actual culprits. So, but by letting Emerald City know that this was a concern, it lets them know that's something they have to make sure is more solid in next year's negotiation.
Yes. And frankly, there's been in the last few months, there's been a lot more discussion as far as inclusivity and bathroom use.
Yeah.
And Emerald City is doing a great job of that. The thing of it is that it is only really starting to become part of it's only starting to seep into culture and starting to be part of discussions.
Yeah.
So I think that that's an important step.
Although the fact that the Emerald City at least tried to have something there, yes, shows they're thinking about it, they're working towards it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing as they listened to the fans and instituted the quiet room.
Yes.
They instituted the cosplay lounge that people could go to fix their costumes. They instituted the family room so parents with children who are overwhelmed can go. So they, you know, if nothing else, it does seem that the lessons learned from years past and mm-hmm. the inclusive nature of the convention, even under Reed Pop, is moving forward.
Yes.
The thing I noticed was, and this was kind of a one of the grumbles I'd been hearing from friends, and it was pretty obvious. They shrunk Artist's Alley.
Yes.
And part of that was they were selling a lot more booth space to other businesses, but also a lot of the artists that were there were bigger name artists.
Yeah.
Because, again, this is Reed Pop. These are the people that run New York City Comic Con. They have contact with artists, and Emerald City itself has become big enough that it can be... When you can bring in Nathan Fillion, and you can bring in...
Patrick Stewart,
and Carrie Fisher, and, you know, people on that top tier, you can also bring in the big-name artists. The problem is that because of cost and because of less space... Some of the smaller local artists who had had tables in years past weren't there this year.
Yeah.
I have a lot of artist friends that I usually go visit them at their booths, and they didn't have booths. The only artists I recognized, there was a pair of magic artists that had a booth, Mark Dedeen and Anson Maddox, that I know from back in the day, and, you know, made it a point of stopping and saying hi to them.
Sure.
And Studio Folio. And I didn't see...
Well, Studio Folio is fairly
big.
Yeah.
And they always have a big booth. So, of course, they were there. And, you know, I know them. Mm-hmm. I've been friends with them for years. And I didn't get a lot of chance to talk to Phil this year because there's a lot of business going on.
Which is not a bad thing.
I did talk to Cheyenne Wright, who works with Phil. And, you know, I have a longstanding relationship with. And, he said things were going great. This year, I did make a point. And part of that was because of what we do here with the podcast. I talked to a lot of vendors, ones I knew or ones I was able to strike up conversations with, because I was really interested in the vendor experience, particularly knowing that there is going to be a massive increase in the cost of booths next year.
Yeah.
One friend of mine told me that her booth is, the increase is going to be $210.
That's just...
For the next year. And other booths were telling me of... upwards of $300.
That's just insane.
Well, on the flip side, every one of these booths said, but yeah, I'll pay it because this is still my most profitable convention of the year. There's one of the people I talked to, corset.net. And
you don't strike me as a corset person.
I don't, but I was with Jill.
Okay, there you go.
I was with Jillian at the time. and to the point of their advertising banner actually has a picture of Jill on it.
Really?
Yeah. From years ago, but yeah, it has a picture of Jill on it. So she's friends with them. And we sat and we talked. And so I was able to strike up a conversation with the guy. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting because he was talking about, you know, he's from, I think, somewhere in New Mexico. He does a lot of traveling shows. And he said, yeah, outside of like, most, I don't even think he didn't say anything, but he said, yeah, Emerald City is one of the, if not the most profitable convention for him go to. And he had to make decisions. He had to drop some conventions this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he had to make a choice for the April conventions. And he said, well, absolutely Emerald City, because I'm going to make money there. And his comment was, and this is what I remember. He said, the Emerald City fan, his Emerald City customers are far more cultured.
Why, and, thank you.
And by that he means they understand that the price of his wares is set at the point it is because it's quality work and quality doesn't come cheap.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who is selling corsets, well-made corsets and kimonos now and doing good business, but they aren't cheap. But he says that the Emerald City crowd knows... He doesn't get the, oh, I can go home and make this for $10 people.
Ew.
That Emerald City appreciates craftsmanship. And so those kind of booths are going to do well because the Emerald City crowd is willing to pay for the good work.
Oh my, yes. There was a leather store up on the sixth floor that I've been hobbying with leather for years.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, not only did I flat out know that there is no way in God's green earth I could have made any of this stuff, but it was of a stunning craftsmanship to the point that I seriously considered shelling out $800 for a jacket at con. I've never done that in my life, but it was good stuff.
Yeah.
So
the message I got was, yes, there's going to be a price increase, but it's not going to stop anyone from coming back because the price, they're still going to make more money.
True.
At the con, they're easily going to make their cost and then some.
The thing that I was curious about, and I wanted to ask you about this, my perception of the con this year was that either there were fewer people or the aisles were just a little larger. Was that a perception that you had at all?
Not really.
Okay.
But I don't know, that's something I was paying attention to.
Everyone always talks about Saturday at Con being the oh my god day as far as being a mass of people. And I didn't feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like there was a little less of a jam pack. It could have been the fact that most of the time that I was wandering through, you know, there were massive celebrity things going on. So it could have been that's what drew the people off of the floor. But at the same time, I think that's the other part with increasing booth fees is that they may be shaving a little off of tables to make a little more room for bodies.
Possibly. I didn't notice, but that's something to keep in mind. The other thing is I did talk to some cosplayers.
Oh, yes.
And the message I got was no problems. I was talking to a woman in a Harley Quinn costume and, you know, one of the more modern-esque Harley Quinn costumes. And I was asking her, you know, how's your experience been? Have people been respectful? And she said, other than some male gaze, everyone had been very respectful of her, of the boundaries, and that she had had no problems. And that's kind of the overall message I heard from people cosplaying that I had a chance to talk to was that Emerald City has developed the culture to the point of, yeah, you're going to get the guys who stare, but that's the worst boundary issue you're going to have. So that's good for it. I mean, obviously the gays can still be problematic, but overall, that's the worst that apparently happens.
So what was the best cosplay you saw?
Wow. Honestly, I just, and this is me as comic book fan adding to the critique. There was a guy who had a dead on Thanos from Marvel Comics.
I saw him.
He was amazing.
Yep.
The only others, I saw a guy who had a prosthetic that I guess it was kind of supposed to be like an ogre face.
Mm-hmm.
He was wearing regular clothes. And over there was a single fang on one side. And it was such well-done prosthetic that for a second there, I was wondering if it wasn't somebody whose face was just naturally deformed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like, no, there's no way. That was clearly a prosthetic. But it was so seamless that I had that uncanny valley moment of trying to make the differentiation. I'd say those two were certainly in contact. I think the Thanos, because he took a recognizable character.
Mm-hmm.
And just nailed bringing it to life.
Cool.
And the other guy, just because of the almost frighteningly good nature of the makeup work.
Good. Yeah, the I saw two pairs. I mean, there were a lot of individual ones. There was a Harley Quinn as a roller derby girl, which was amazing, including the roller skate, which is saying something. But there were two pairs that really impressed me. There was a father-son duo that the father was Hobbes and the son was Calvin.
I saw them, yeah.
And so the height differentiation and the costumes were just spot on. But then there was a couple that one was Kylo Ren and the other one was zombie Han Solo. So like ashy face and the hole in the chest. And it was just like, oh, too soon, but good.
I think the one thing I noticed on the Star Wars, a lot of Rey.
Oh, yeah. A lot of Rey.
A lot of Rey. A little bit of Kylo, but a lot of Rey.
A lot of Rey. A lot of X-Wing fighters.
Yeah.
With the orange jumpsuits, unless it's just creative crossover from people who used to do Battlestar Galactica.
True.
But, yeah, a lot of Rey. And a lot of BB-8s, too.
Yeah, a lot of interesting variation on BB-8. Mm-hmm. So, definitely Force Awakens has hit as far as the con scene goes.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's with good reason. Yeah. I mean, and frankly, there were a lot of Finns too.
No,
so
yeah. Representation matters. We'll be talking a little bit about that when we get into movies.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to talk about for Emerald City for me, I didn't go Friday because I had other commitments. On Saturday, I spent quite a bit of time with Jill,
mm-hmm.
going around and talking. And one thing she told me, and this is little self promotion at the moment, but she did a Gothing Comics panel.
Yes.
And Karen Gillan of Wicked and Divine.
Oh, okay.
And the Darth Vader comic was there. Wicked and Divine has become huge.
Okay.
Huge. There's a lot of cosplay on it. It involves gods in the modern day, or manifestations of gods in the modern day. So, like, cool. Hekate and Morgan are
awesome
are characters.
Hadn't heard of that one.
But yeah, it's really tearing up the scene.
Cool.
It's a lot of people are saying this might be this generation's Sandman.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we've talked before about what a good writer he is.
Okay.
Now, that his Darth Vader comic is simply amazing, and this is his personal creation. So yeah, they were on the panel, but the guy who moderated the panel pulled Jill aside later and was asking, so when are we getting information on your podcast, Family Skeletons? And she said soon, which actually we had been planning on putting an announcement after the con, which we did. But it's like, oh, people are getting interested. Good.
Yes.
So,
yes. Family Skeletons coming soon to a podcast near you.
But we had a lot of talk. We wandered the convention and chatted with people. And yeah, it was a good time. And Jill always gets really excited about either seeing really good cosplay or just seeing people do really interesting and unique things. She took me over to a lot of vendors who were selling interesting stuff, including a company that sells little hex breaking kits and little kits to invite a ghost to haunt your house. And she thought that was just the best thing she'd ever seen.
Nice.
So, with that, that was our convention experience. So, moving on, because obviously that took up a lot of time. Let's briefly talk about the state of cinema.
Cinema. You mean the fact that Batman versus Superman lost to
the boss last week?
Yeah.
Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah.
Real interesting thing. A lot of people keep writing about Melissa McCarthy like she's not very successful, and yet all of her movies she has yet to have a flop.
Yeah.
She keeps making money. Part of it is that her movies aren't that expensive to make, but always get an audience.
Yeah. But she's going to be one of the people in the new Ghostbusters.
She's one of the new Ghostbusters.
Hell yeah.
The new Ghostbusters, here's the thing. You look at it, and these are the current, like, top women in comedy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, her and Kristen Wiig alone.
Yeah.
Would make it a big deal. Add everyone, and yeah, you've got something going on. And a lot of people are losing it because, yeah, it's women, but you know what? It's four really funny women.
Yep.
Who it really is paralleling the original Ghostbusters with where those guys sat in comedy at the time it was made. It's where these women sit in comedy now.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be one of the big defenders, I think, especially because I saw the trailer and went, that actually looks funny. Well, but
yes,
what we want to talk about is Batman v Superman.
Do we have to?
It'll be the only time.
Okay. Coming soon to a DVD near you.
You know, what's funny is I hear a lot of people saying Batman v Superman, Sucker Punch 2.
creative. Okay.
Well, what I think, and I think some people really nailed it, what the problem with Zack Snyder as a director is he's not a storyteller. He's all about the visual shot. He makes beautiful looking movies, but his most successful films have been direct adaptations of other work where he didn't have to create a story. It was already there for him. And I'm talking about 300 and Watchmen.
Yep.
But otherwise his movies, if left to his own devices, tend to be very disjointed.
Well, and with 300 and Watchmen, I mean, the storyboard for the movie was pretty much the comic.
Yeah. So,
I think that was Sin City too. But
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, but he that wasn't him. The problem is, in the end, he's just not the right storyteller for the big icons of the DC universe. And I think the audience made that pretty clear. Yeah, it had a big opening, but also had the biggest drop off.
Yeah,
somebody said that this week it looks like the movie has reached $800 million, which means it's made back its cost.
Yeah, but most movies have to make back 2 to 3 times their cost, right, in order for them to actually get into the black.
Right. So that's it's not been it's Warner Brothers certainly knows they have a problem.
Yes.
And
well, do they? That's the thing. They keep making these movies, and it doesn't seem like they're learning anything from.
Well, I think I think they are where there is a problem. I think they're having a trouble nailing down how to fix it within their own corporate culture.
Ding.
Because that's the problem. It's a culture. I actually was having discussions with people because we were doing the conventions. It's Warner Brothers versus Marvel philosophy. And Warner Brothers has admitted they have a committee. And it is actually filmmaking by committee, and that they, you know, when the director is doing the movie, they let the creative talent do what they want. It's very director-centric. Whereas Disney.
Yeah.
Disney, all right, we've got a division, and we're going to put somebody in charge who's got a vision and is going to run it, and they're going to be the last word. And with Marvel, that's Kevin Feige. With Lucasfilm, that's Kathleen Kennedy. With Pixar, that's Lasseter. They have strong visionaries at the top who are then given autonomy. Disney's philosophy is not broke, don't fix.
True. That said, I wish Feige would stop coming up with stupid excuses as why we can't have a Black Widow movie or a Captain Marvel movie. But, you know.
Sure, but be that as it may, the overall Marvel product in the films is solid because it is a clear vision.
Yes.
We may not always agree with the vision, but it's at least a clear vision.
Yes.
And I think with the DC slate, it's not as clear. Although, here's the weird thing, though. I have hope for some of the movies. I just don't know that I have hope for the entire line. I enjoyed the latest Suicide Squad trailer.
Yep.
But that also does not involve Zack Snyder. And it's the Suicide Squad. It's supposed to be dark. So I'm okay with that. I like what I've seen of Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned something interesting. So traditionally Wonder Woman is looked at as debuted in World War II.
Right.
The movie is being set in World War I.
Interesting.
Part of that is so they can tie in the suffragette movement.
Okay, cool.
And yeah. But they also, because a war where there was less moral absolutes. World War II, it's pretty easy. No, the Nazis are bad. Let's stop them.
Yes.
World War I, a little bit more ambiguity.
At the same time, it was just World War I was a slaughterhouse.
Well, sure, but that's, I think the idea is they're trying to take the Wonder Woman concept, and the idea is that I think the sequel will then be World War II.
Okay.
That's the idea. They want to play with she's an immortal.
Okay.
As the theme. And I'm like, also, as one person put it, Captain America did World War II.
True.
How many people do movies about World War I?
I like that. The last one that I can remember is Razor's Edge with Bill Murray, and we all know how well that one did. Although that got us Ghostbusters 2, for better or for worse.
Yeah.
What did that remind me of? See, okay, if they're going to play with this, though, here's the thing. World War I, great, sure. Include the suffragette movement, awesome sauce. World War II, great, fine, whatever. Are they going to touch on Korea? Are they going to touch on Vietnam? Are they going to touch on Afghanistan? Because Afghanistan and Iraq is where we finally start getting women in combat. And I think that is, they're going to do this as a standard, I think it would be a great thing for them to include.
Maybe. Sure. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball on that, but yeah. This is what's been reported so far. The other thing going on is we had the Rogue One trailer release.
Oh my, yes.
and yet the man babies came out in force.
Of course.
I think they're just having problems that the decision to make Star Wars inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You're going to have to live with it. You've got a great visionary in Kathleen Kennedy running the show, and they have decided Star Wars is for everyone.
I have to say that was my, aside from jumping up and down and acting like I was 12 again, I have to give a shout out because they managed in the 90 seconds that is that trailer to include more inclusivity and more representation in that 90 seconds than I think the first 6 Star Wars movies.
Sure.
Because Donnie Yen, oh my God. I don't remember the other guy's name. Oh my God. Forrest Whitaker. Yes.
And yeah. And I know Mads Mikkelsen from Hannibal, yeah. And from Doctor Strange, which we'll talk about in a second, is in it.
Mm-hmm.
It just looks great. Now, a lot of people were like, people kept going, where are the Bothans? Mm-hmm. And the problem is, this is the first Death Star. This is a prequel to New Hope.
Yes.
This is where the Rebels got the plans for the first Death Star. In fact, the great joke was, wow, I hope they stop the Death Star before it does anything bad.
So, or no Bothans were harmed in the making of this movie.
That was my joke. No Bothans were harmed in the making of this movie.
The other thing to touch on, and actually kind of harking back to Ghostbusters as well, several people have talked about the Bechdel test. Alison sure. Bechdel. I actually got to meet her a while back. Awesome lady. Which is where two women talk about something besides a man
right.
on screen. Sounds simple. Very few movies pass it. Although the introduction to Sir Mix-a-Lot's Oh My God, Becky, Look at Her Butt
counts.
Passes.
Yes, I love that.
But there's that one is, it's been around for a while. I have a new test I've heard floating about. The Furiosa test. The Furiosa test is an installment of an established franchise that causes fanboys to threaten a boycott and rage quit. So you have Furiosa and Mad Max, Fury Road. You've got the new reboot of Ghostbusters. You've got Rey from Force Awakens. And you've got the Rogue One. So four in the last year. Nicely done, folks.
Yeah. Well, and I think it shows a shift.
Yes.
I think Hollywood, the smart parts of Hollywood are waking up and realizing we want diversity. And I think the rest of Hollywood's going, these movies are making a lot of money. People are going to pay if we include diversity. I mean, every movie you listed, the ones that have already come out have been big successes.
Yeah.
So, yes, the time has come.
And as a segue, the things where there are, where specifically not inclusive, is where I'm interested to see to see if there's going to be a dichotomy between the two. See also Doctor Strange. See also Ghost in the Shell. There's your segue.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you know, we've talked that the whitewash movies have been going down in flames, and there's a massive backlash on Ghost in the Shell. Doctor Strange is a little trickier. Somebody said that they may be playing with a reincarnation angle with the Ancient One. In the end, it's like you cast a white actress to play an Asian man. So, I don't know. Other than that, I like the Doctor Strange trailer.
The Doctor Strange trailer looked good. I had to make sure that it wasn't Inception Part 2. The rest of the story is frankly, I'll watch Tilda Swinton do damn near just about anything.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, in the end, it's still Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, because she stole the show in Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
The only lovers left alive. Mm-hmm. I mean, she does incredible work.
Now, to be fair, they didn't show it. There are Asian characters in the movie.
Okay.
And they have Chiwetel Ejiofor as Baron Mordo, who's a major character from the comics.
Good.
So there is diversity in the cast. It's just that one character. And it is, I want to see how they pull it off because I got a feeling there's a swerve in there we haven't seen yet.
Fair enough.
Versus Ghost in the Shell, where it's just bad casting choice.
Yes.
The other thing is, we are weeks away from the debut of Captain America Civil War.
Woohoo!
And again, they're introducing a lot more. They've got Black Panther coming in.
Yep.
One thing that I've been really glad, they already have toys coming out, and it's very clear they got the message Black Widow is front and center.
Good.
In the toy marketing. So that part, at least, we're making progress. It'll be interesting to see. Again, it's going to be, depending on how Civil War does, there's going to be that whole, well, here's what Civil War did versus Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
Although, again, somebody pointed out, you know, it is possible to enjoy both.
It is.
But it means both need to be making good movies.
Yes. There will always be popcorn movies.
Yeah.
You know, there will always be meaty, heavy Oscar contenders. And it is possible to enjoy both. It also harkens back to that panel that I was telling you about that I went to at Emerald City, as far as being able to enjoy media that is problematic, which, and still being able to critique it.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah.
So, real quick, I want to touch on TV.
All
specifically, so we had a recent episode of the show Supergirl that was a fairly groundbreaking crossover because it was crossing over with a TV show from a different network.
Right.
Because they had The Flash appear, and they did it via interdimensional travel.
Sure.
But this was, you know, everyone's like, so in this era where it's superhero versus superhero, it was great to have two superheroes meet and immediately hit it off.
Yeah.
immediately become best friends because their in the show, both Supergirl and the Flash are at heart big dorks.
Yeah, the thing where she's like, "That's my spaceship."
Yeah, and he's like, "Oh, can I get a picture?" Yeah, that they bond by not just that they have superpowers, but at the heart they're kind of dorky.
Yeah,
and they actually played it to make one of the love interests on Supergirl jealous because it was Jimmy Olsen. Seeing how the Flash and Supergirl were bonding and realizing, did I miss my opportunity here? So, but no, it was a really great episode because, again, it's the shows you can do light and hopeful superheroes.
Yes.
That are positive and have a fun show because it was a great episode.
Good.
So it was one of those real high point moments where it's like, yeah, it's where you sit back and go, Warner Brothers, you clearly can do good things with these characters because look at your TV franchises. They're great. Mm-hmm. Arrow could use some work this year, and I'm a little disappointed in some of the storytelling on Legends of Tomorrow, but Flash and Supergirl are still great. I'm still enjoying Arrow.
Yeah.
I haven't watched Gotham in weeks.
Hi, my name is Jeff, and I haven't watched Gotham in 3 weeks. Hi, Jeff!
Jill literally sat me down at dinner one night and said, Jeff, you just need to stop hate-watching Gotham.
Yes.
And it's like, well, Jill told me.
Uh-huh.
You know, my younger sister said I can't watch Gotham.
Well, no, specifically, you can't hate watch it. If you're going to watch it, watch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, go on.
So we've got Preacher coming up, which, here's the thing. They keep wanting to do these really violent Garth Ennis series on TV. And it's like, you guys, these were considered pushing the envelope in comics, violent books, and you're doing them on TV. I mean, yeah, you do The Walking Dead, but I don't know. This isn't shooting zombies in the head.
Yeah.
But if they do them well, I'll give them a chance. Like anything, I'll give it a chance. I'll give it some episodes, and then we'll see where we go from there. At least it's not and they fight crime.
True.
Oh, yeah, the other one is, besides Preacher, they're going to do The Boys.
The Boys?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not going to get into what The Boys is right now.
Fair enough.
We'll see if it actually goes forward.
Thinking of television?
All right.
I just have to toss in a happy little bit. I finally binge-watched my way through season 4 of Game of Thrones.
All right.
I have to give a shout-out to the fans.
All right.
And this is a funny one. So, no spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
All I will say is, I find it highly amusing that the thing that was actually in the book is the thing that everyone's like reacting, oh my god, blah, blah, what are we going to do about this? And the things that aren't in the book, that are going to be in theoretical book 6,
mm-hmm,
that were shockers at the end of the season, no one has said a word about. And that's what I find interesting.
All right.
Everyone's so upset about this thing, this shocker spoiler that isn't a shocker spoiler, and there's other stuff that's blew me through the back of the wall, and I'm like, but what? But what? 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 So,
fair enough. Real quick on comic books.
Yes?
We are on the verge of DC Rebirth.
Which reboot?
Well, here's the thing. They're not saying it's a reboot. I got a feeling it's... So, when they had, say, Crisis on Infinite Earths, and there was problems from that, they then had Zero Hour, which wasn't resetting the continuity, but was tweaking the timeline to fix issues. And I think Rebirth is one of those. The thing I know is this. We talked previously about they had a Superman series where it was turns out the old continuity Superman was on the new Earth.
Right.
So what's happening is, in the current storyline leading up to Rebirth, the new 52 Earth Superman is dying. Something's happened and he's dying. He's saying, and my understanding is he's just going to die.
Skin cancer from too much sun?
What? Not far off. A form of cancer from kryptonite.
Okay, there you go.
And the old continuity Superman will take over as the main Superman.
Oh, so he'll come out of retirement.
He'll come out of retirement and become Superman. And somehow Lois Lane gets superpowers and becomes Superwoman.
I'm not going there.
And in the series, they already had a son, and mm-hmm, that son will be the new Superboy.
Okay.
So there's going to literally be a Superman family.
Together they fight crime.
Yeah. So that's
The Incredibles, part two.
But my understanding is a lot of the reboot is going to be, not a reboot, but retooling aspects of the newer universe to make it more attractive to older fans.
Good.
You know, a Superman who is together with a Lois Lane
yes.
again and stuff like that. Over at Marvel, they're just chugging right ahead with their what they've done ever since Secret Wars. And again, it seems to be working. They're doing well. The books are good. They're having a lot of fun with the X-Line. I get a lot of exposure to because I follow Jay and Miles. And they killed Wolverine off a while ago.
He's only 200 years old. I mean, it's about time.
So what they did is they have a new Wolverine, which was a character X-23,
mm-hmm.
who was Wolverine's female clone. She's now Wolverine. And there's an alternate timeline version of Wolverine from the future that's being referred to as Old Man Logan, who's wandering around. So that's how they keep him in there.
Okay.
Other than that, things are going well. So we're running low on time, but I want to touch on podcasts real quick.
Besides the awesome one that's coming soon to a
season. Yeah, yeah. So, yes, we're working on Family Skeletons. Stay tuned. Or follow the Tumblr Family Skeletons podcast. But, Wolf 359.
Yes.
Wolf 359, as the season chugs on, they released a special episode both on the podcast and on their YouTube channel.
Oh, cool.
Because they did a live show in New York.
That I'm kicking myself for missing when I was back there.
And they, it was a one night thing, and it's available. You can see it on YouTube because they filmed it, or you can just listen to the podcast. Although I do recommend watching the video because they did have a little audience interaction that makes more sense when you see what's happening. But it was the entire cast,
cool,
minus the new characters this season. It was a real funny thing to watch how Zach Valenti physically dealt with playing Eiffel and Hilbert in the scenes together.
Oh, nice.
He would literally change where he was standing versus the other characters, versus Minkowski. So Eiffel would be on one side of Minkowski, and Hilbert would be on the other, and Valenti would just switch to whichever side he was supposed to be on for which character.
Oh, there you go. Well done.
And they actually set it in continuity. There's a little tag at the beginning saying where this fits in Wolf 359 continuity.
Oh.
And the latest episode of Wolf 359 that went up this week references something that happened in the live show.
Nice!
So, if nothing else, they've got their continuity really solid.
I was going to say, they managed to retcon that one. It's not even a retcon. It's kind of just going back and having a flashback.
Yeah,
so, nicely
basically,
done.
They've done well. Writing has always been a real strength on that show.
Oh, yeah. I love the write-ups that Gabriel has been putting up as far as the kind of the process that he goes through with the... with how he makes the episodes happen. Well,
and I've been reading them because since I'm writing a show, it's like, this is great. This is telling me what stuff he and I do the same, what stuff we do differently. It's been great. So other than that, I found a new podcast.
Uh-oh.
So this is a little different. This is a show called The Children's Hour of Knowledge.
Uh-oh.
And its tagline is, not really for children, not an hour, 0% knowledge. They're little 5-minute comedy bits about a children's show out of Detroit that involves one live actor and a bunch of puppets that consistently goes off the rails. It's got a little Greg the Bunny aspect that the puppets, they're puppets, but they are, in fact, autonomous characters. There's no puppeteer.
Oh, so it's kind of like a Roger Rabbit sort of...
With puppets, yeah. And... yeah, it's silly and irreverent and definitely not for children. I think it actually has let's put it this way. They have a character who, because we try and keep this show PG, I can't really say their name. It's Count Blankula. Let's call it that, where the blank is an F word.
It sounds
like duck.
Yeah, charades don't work so well on podcasts.
But they have, it's Wolfman Mozart is my favorite, the werewolf musician. So, yeah, it's certainly worth checking out. Even though it's been going on for years, they sporadically put out stuff. So I think it's still actually going on. But it's if nothing else, it's an interesting diversion and a different way of looking at doing the scripted podcast medium.
Yep.
With that, we're kind of getting tight on time. Is there anything you want to say in wrap up?
Not the only other thing I have to add is that apparently the last few installments of Fight Club 2 are out. I haven't had a chance to pick them up yet, but that means I can actually sit down and read the whole series because I've been waiting to do the whole thing.
Cool.
Really looking forward to it.
All right. Well, as always, we thank you for listening to the show.
Yes, thank you.
If you want to get in touch with Daniel and I, you can go to fanboynewsnetwork.com and leave us a message in the comments section. We always like hearing from fans.
Yes.
And with that, we will talk to you again in the very near future.
Have a good fortnight, y'all. See you soon.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network and is copyright 2016 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from the Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.